Well, this morning we're visiting with Bob Anderson. Bob lives here in Atlantic, and he is a World War II era veteran. He was spent a couple of years in the Navy, and I want to talk a little bit about some of those experiences with Bob. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Well, it's good to be here, Jim.
You bet. Well, it's good to. It was good to be in high school, I guess, during the majority of World War II. You were a young fellow when the balance of World War II was going on.
I was actually in eighth grade when Pearl Harbor came along, and so I was eighth grade and in through 3 years of high school during the war years. When we had the unconditional surrender of Japan, I still had one more year of high school.
But you you enlisted in the Navy.
Enlisted after I was out of high school, yes.
In September of 1946.
Yes.
A two-year hitch. So technically still, even though the hostilities were largely finished for World War II, that era was still going on through the end of the year, so you were classified as a World War II veteran. So.
Correct. Actually, President Truman did not declare hostilities ended until December 31st of 1946. And so there was about a three-month period that I was in that was still World War II.
Can we talk just a little bit about before you enlisted? As a student at that time who's getting close to that age with so much going on in the world with World War II, what were the thoughts? I mean, what's going through your mind all during this time?
Well, for instance, when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, we had no idea what that meant. We just knew that we were going to be in war. Now, we had thought that our war would start over in Europe because that's where all the activity was. So it was a great surprise to us to see it happening in the Japanese area. We, not knowing what to do, it was frightening, yes. And there were certain things that we had to put up with, rationing and so on. We all had our ration cards. We could not get tires for our cars. The interesting part, we had a tractor that was on steel, and we could easily get rubber for that tractor and put it on rubber. And the reason being that in the war effort, food was a great problem at that time. And they wanted plenty of food so the farmers could get tires for their tractor, but not for their car.
Young people today learn about World War II largely from, you know, books, movies, schoolwork, and what have you. But they get the focus on the military activity, what was going on there. They don't really get the information on what was going on back home during that time. And you and I were discussing earlier before we got on the air here about how it's affected the civilian population as well.
Oh, very much so. It affected you every day. And, of course, you had neighbors and friends and so on that were continually going into the military service. And maybe some of them would be gone for, let's say, 6 or 8 months, and word had come back that that person would have died, was killed in action in, for instance, Germany, or over in one of the islands in the South Pacific. So it hit home. It hit home. And, of course, you had relation. I had two cousins in the military at that time.
You never get used to it.
No.
But it becomes a little bit commonplace.
Yes, it's an everyday occurrence for you, yes.
Talk about your decision to enlist.
Well, I assume that I was thinking of getting into the military all through high school. You just knew you were going to because all of your friends were as they were graduating. So as soon as I would graduate, I would be going into the military. Well, it so happened the war was over, but they were still wanting people in the military.
And you got in, I guess, at a time when the pay just dramatically increased.
Well, yes. See, when World War II broke out, Pearl Harbor, the buck private or the apprentice seaman was getting $21 a month. By the time I joined in 1946, I was getting $75 a month, so I was extremely happy.
You offered a kid $75 a month now? You know what kind of a look you'd get?
Well, we weren't used to that money. The cash was not available in those days. That was one of the problems with the Depression. And when I got out of boot camp, they sent us home with the money we had earned. And, of course, we had no place to spend it during boot camps. And each one of us had acquired $160. And you sat down in front of that pay clerk, and that pay clerk put eight $20 bills down in front of you. And you had never seen that much money together at one place in your whole life.
It was just, that was a wealth of money. That was like robbing a bank.
Oh, yes.
Well, talk a little bit about your experience. What did you do in the Navy? What were you responsible for?
Before I went in, the Navy offered a course or a schooling in electronics, and I was very interested in that. It'd be radio and radar. And so they had tests. They called it the Eddy test for some reason, and you took that, and I passed it and qualified for going into the electronics school, which was a 48-week school. So consequently, I knew what I was going to do in the Navy before I went in.
You know, interestingly, you had an opportunity to do a few things here and there, but joining the Navy, the first thing someone thinks about is, oh, well, you got to see the world, sailing the seven seas and all these different things, but your travel was somewhat limited.
It so happened that, to put it in a nutshell, I never saw an ocean, I never saw a Navy ship, and I never got out of the Central Time Zone.
And that's what the Navy is like.
Huh? Well, it was embarrassing. 5 years later, we come back, and of course, my buddies had joined. You could go into the Army for 18 months at the time, or the Navy for 2 years. And most of my buddies went into the Army for 18 months. Well, they were in the occupation forces in either Japan or Germany. So we had our 5-year reunion, and they told about all their travels over there. And poor me, I got up, and I never got out of the Central Time Zone.
So what did you do during the whole that time? Was that largely spent with education?
Yes, as I indicated, it was a 48-week school, and of course, you do a lot of things before you get into school. I joined in September, and my school didn't start until February the 1st. You had boot camp, you had boot leave, you had transportation to your destination, and so on. That took 5 months. Well, then I was in school for the 48 weeks, so when I graduated from the school, I only had about 7 months left in the Navy, and then I was an instructor in that school.
Well, and it's all important stuff. I know some folks will say, well, gee whiz, some guys have these incredible stories of hand-to-hand combat and being in gun battles and what have you and stuff, and, you know, how can it be that some people don't have that? Well, it's like any organization, up and down the ladder. I mean, you have people that do this and some folks that are assigned to do other things. Everything complements everything else.
Yes. In fact, we know about those that were in combat, but I think the saying is that it takes five people back of that person in combat to supply that person with combat, yes.
Well, and it's so much about readiness and things, too. And let's face it, technology was changing. We don't sometimes think about it, but technology was beginning to change at that time, too. And so what you were being instructed in were things that are going to continue to morph and change over time.
Oh, yes. In fact, the transistor, which replaced the vacuum tube, was just discovered by AT&T in 1946, I think it was. And, of course, it takes several years to get it into practical use. So we worked with vacuum tubes. We worked with resistors and condensers, and all those circuits now are miniaturized to the point where all the things I worked with are obsolete.
And think about it. What would a military effort be like without radios, radars, all those kinds of things? I mean, those are obviously important instruments.
Well, in those days, radar was in its very infancy. In fact, you didn't use radar to look at the weather. You looked at you used it to look at other ships or other buildings or other things that you wanted to define where it was. And so consequently, in fact, it was so secret that where I was stationed in Corpus Christi, and they had probably built this one base specifically for electronics in at the beginning of World War II. And you're familiar with that any military operation has an 8-foot-high fence clear around the whole thing. Well, they not only had that at Ward Island, Corpus Christi, but they also had another compound within that with an 8-foot-high fence. And you would march into that compound every day to school, and you would take no written information out of that compound. And so consequently, it was very secretive at that time.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting to hear the stories and amazing worked for me, too. I mean, we've all done things for a short period of time in our lives that maybe we've forgotten about, or it just wasn't that it wasn't that significant to us. But it's amazing, some of the folks like yourself who spent 2 years serving the country, how much you were allowed to do, were able to do during that period of time, the education, the opportunities and things in just that short period of time. It's an incredible education.
Yeah, it is. And they do a good job, and probably still do in the military, especially the Navy, in training these men for their purpose.
Right. And too, not too long ago, a few years ago, you got a chance to be part of those honor flights as well.
Yes, the memorial for World War II was not constructed in Washington, D.C. until 2004. And it was then thought that, boy, our military, our World War II veterans are going to come flocking in. Well, they didn't, because physically they weren't able to. And so consequently, they organized these honor flights where they would take the in wheelchairs or so on, and into Washington, D.C. to see that. And that was known as the honor flights, and I happened to be on in one of those in 2008.
You bet. Well, a lot of interesting memories. Like I said, I can't remember some of the things I did when I was 18, 19 years old, and it's amazing how many veterans have vivid memories to this day of some of the things they did 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Oh, yeah. It's just like it was yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Well, Bob, thanks for coming in, sharing some of your life with us. We appreciate it very much, and we salute you for your service. Thanks a lot for all you've done for us.
Thank you, Jim.